Good morning and welcome to the Henry Raines Show, where you have the power to have your voice heard, to inform and become informed, from local to global on the issues you care about most, on your hometown morning talk show, wherever your hometown may be. I'm Robin Davis, and we have Jim Delgado here in the studio for, now, Jim Delgado Thursday, like it's every day of the week now. And on the line, we've got Dennis Malley, the editor of the Bradenton Times. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Sorry, I was just finished my last bite of breakfast. I apologize.
It wasn't a honey bun in a breakfast dog, was it?
It was not. It was some healthy cereal with some strawberries and blueberries. Very good.
Okay, just making sure.
And so, Dennis, that's exactly where we're going this morning. You have an article that came out this morning in the Bradenton Times Thursday update, and the question you asked was, are school cafeterias hindering classroom success?
This is something that came up in a debate. Now, this is something I've been involved in for a while. I talked to some school board members about it. And after spending a lot of time in my son's cafeteria, I go over there pretty regularly. We have breakfast and lunch together. We pack it and hang out for a little bit. And some of the things I would see in the cafeteria just blew my mind. And one of them was, and keep in mind, this is an elementary school where they have much less in terms of options than they do in the high schools. But they really were allowed to choose junk food. And it's set up in a way, you know, when you look at the school guidelines, and that's kind of, you know, I include a video of the debate that I was in recently at the bottom of that article, and you'll hear the first 10 or 15 minutes is the dietitian for the school district going on and on about all the great things they have in the lunches. And if you were just to hear that, you would think Manatee County was this progressive, you know, wonderful, organic program. When the reality, what happens in the cafeteria is anything but. They talk about, you know, the never really referencing that the data they're giving is for the total menu. So she'll say, you know, each meal, meaning breakfast, total served in the cafeteria has to have this percent of this and this percent of that. But what they neglect to tell you is the kids have options of what they take and don't take. And they can also supplement it for 75 cents. They can buy a snack, of which all are basically crap in a bag. And, you know, getting that snack, a lot of times they could just avoid then one of the things they would have to take, be either the fruit or vegetable. And the fruit can be, you know, candied peaches and syrup, you know, something like that. So when you see what actually goes on their plate and what they're sitting down eating, it's really, really offensive. I mean, you see kids with, you know, literally donuts or cupcakes and cookies and, you know, maybe one good meal item and a chocolate milk. It's really not anything approaching the kind of meal I think most parents would want to feed their children. And a lot of parents, you find out, don't really know this. You know, they're not really finding out, hey, what is my kid actually eating? They see what's on the menu and say, okay, it's a chicken nugget, say, that can't be too bad. And that's all they see. But they really don't have a handle on what their kid's actually eating in the cafeteria. When you go in and you see it, it's really, really bad. And if you have a background, you understand the tie-in between academic performance and diet, and now you see things like that. You know, we're 47th out of 57 districts in the state. It's, you know, it starts to, a red light goes off and says, hey, here's one area where we can really help things, but we're really shooting ourselves in the foot instead. But it doesn't seem that anybody at the district level sees a problem.
Dennis, you said 47 out of 50 in what?
In academic performance. So FCATs and the people reading at school, grade level, people doing math at grade level, So the overall rankings of the county that takes everything into consideration, I think including graduation rate, we rank 47th.
In our state?
In our state, yes. In the state that is...
So we rank 47 out of 50 in a state that ranks 49 out of 50?
Correct.
Wow.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but in Florida, if there was ever an argument for private schools or moving, it's kind of sad. And I think, Dennis, you've hit the nail on the head. Now, you're an athlete. How did the bad nutrition, how can that affect the kids' performance?
Well, you know, the biggest thing you have to look at, especially with children, or really anybody for that matter, when you're looking at diet, you're looking at keeping your blood sugar at a very managed level all day long. It's kind of like, to be honest, we should all be eating the way they teach a diabetic to eat, because really what you want to do is eat meals that convert to sugar slowly over about a 2 or 3 hour period and then eat another meal. If that's happening, then you don't have erratic spikes in blood sugar and your pancreas doesn't have to produce insulin all day long trying to manage that, then you don't have these peaks and lows all the time. And some of the things that we're seeing, especially in kids, is there's a lot of evidence that kids have been misdiagnosed with ADD and ADHD when it was really from a high glycemic diet, because the symptoms of each are almost identical. You're going to have a hard time paying attention. In fact, an interesting one is with alcoholism recently, they looked at glycogen in the blood levels and the heightened levels as being one of the problems that is associated with judgment. So when you look and you put a kid in heightened glycogen level, which really it's similar to a kid being inebriated when they're on a sugar high. You know, they use that term appropriately. When somebody has, you know, the meal I described was about, God, I think it was like 80 or 60-some grams of sugar in it. So when you talk about a small body eating that much sugar at once, they're really going to be, they're medicated at that point. The chemistry in the body is altered so drastically, it is a form of inebriation. And then you're asking them to sit in a classroom, pay attention, behave enough to even absorb these things, and then retain them and perform well. It's almost impossible, setting them up for failure.
But, Dennis, let's take this to a national level. Mrs. Obama was talking about this issue when her husband first came into office. I mean, and she got blasted. I mean, if Mrs. Obama can't talk about health and nutrition, you know, the argument becomes, well, you know, now the government is trying to tell us what to eat. I mean, that's a fact. How do we do? I mean, we know our kids are obese. We know they're suffering from there's an increase in diabetes. I went to Busch Gardens the other day, and I just sat there, and we are an obese country.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't walk through Walmart. I used to tell people that work in the health club industry, when you know, when they're looking at the people in the health club, you know, that's a you know, less than 5% of the people of the general population that go to a place like that. If you really want to see what the population looks like, walk through a Walmart,
right,
and you'll see that. And here's the thing, Jim, and this is the part that when you get into healthcare, this is the kind of silver bullet thing that I always bring back. Listen, you're paying for it regardless.
Right.
So until we become a society where we say, hey, if somebody comes in the emergency room, we're going to let that little kid bleed out in his mom's lap because he doesn't have health insurance, I don't think anybody's advocating that. But until you do that, then we all have a shared interest in health. And there really is, and when you look at mandated coverage, when you look at anything, that really is what it comes down to, that if we're all paying for it anyway,
right,
then we should be able to say, listen, can we take some reasonable steps toward making sure that I'm not paying needlessly for just people being misinformed, uneducated, or making poor decisions, and if they won't make them by themselves, then maybe, yes, maybe the government doesn't just step in and say, hey, listen, we're going to, you know, like New York recently did, by next year they're going to say that, listen, if you're going to have a sugar-filled soft drink, you can't get the 44-ounce tub anymore.
Right.
You know, they're going to cap it at 16 ounces, and people will say the same thing, oh, that's the government, you just buy two of them. Well, go ahead, but maybe maybe by making you make a conscious effort, this is so bad, they're making me buy them two at a time,
right,
to put in my body, maybe that's something to it. Now, you brought up the First Lady's approach to it. Yes, you're right. But, you know, at the end of the day, there were still people that appreciated that. Because
right,
the thing that I come into more than anything is just a lack of education on it. You know, I have parents that say, you know, and the real poor part about school districts is what they've got to realize is that they're subtly endorsing these foods. Because I have parents that say all the time, well, they couldn't feed it to them in the schools if it was that bad for them. You know, they're not allowed to because there are these standards. So the parents say, you know, if you feed them at school, it can't be that bad. And then the school turns around and says, well, this is the same stuff the parents are feeding them at home anyway. So if they're sending them in, this is what they send them. So nobody's taking that shared interest approach to it. And I think that, you know, it would be much harder to do from the top down in this instance than it would from the bottom up. The school district just said, listen, we're failing our kids in terms of performance. We're failing our taxpayers in terms of return on investment. And here's, you know, the two things we know about that impact student performance the most are poverty, okay, that's the number one hindrance, right. And the second is access to quality nutrition. At a school district level, we could do nothing about the poverty, but we could do a lot about the access to quality nutrition. So if they were going to say, listen, we're going to get this one thing right, and we're promising parents that if they get a lunch in our line, it is going to be healthy, it is going to be nutritious, and they're going to have the proper body chemistry that day to perform well academically. We're going to get them started on the right foot. And if you want to give them crap in a bag and send it in, that's your right as a parent, but we will no longer be part of that. We won't endorse that. And then maybe have some educational meetings, have some, you know, free presentations once a week that parents can come in the evening and just give them some ideas, help them with, you know, snacks and different things to try to get on the same page. I think a lot of parents, my experience has been they're very, very hungry for that kind of information.
You know, one of the things that I noticed, I went to Argentina a few times, go there, at least try to get there once a year, and the first time I went there, I was wondering why the people were not obese like us. You know, they eat a lot of pasta, they eat a lot of meat, dinner is like at 9 and 10 o'clock, and I was asking somebody, you know, how do you guys do it? He said, well, it's easy. He goes, we don't eat what you guys eat. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, what's in your food? He said, our food is more natural, it's healthy overall, but and they don't suffer. You know, you look around, you watch the streets, they did not have an obesity problem like we did, but also they don't allow trans fats. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. So it's not really how much we intake, it's what we're taking in.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. I mean, you look at it and you say, one, the processed food, because when you look at the carbohydrates and you say that we're eating stuff that are heavily refined, which the more, you know, long-term something has to be in terms of shelf life, the more processed it's going to be. The more processed it is, the faster it's going to digest. So we eat this high glycemic, this very fast-burning food that tends to, you know, even if you're eating a lot of it, every time your blood sugar goes up and the insulin goes out and pulls it back down, it sends an urge to your body to medicate again with more of it. So you're more inclined to pick at the wrong foods all day long, and then you're also sending a fat-storing hormone out into your body, the insulin, to do something with those sugars immediately. So it's a little different than eating a natural, you know, less processed type of carbohydrate. But the other part is that we have this system, this big money system of doing everything, including school foods, that where everything has to be coming from the same source a million miles away. In Manatee County, it's funny because we have a contract with U.S. Foods. Now, U.S. Foods is a conglomerate that is all over the country. They feed hospitals. They feed prisons. So they streamline everything. Almost everything you get from them is either pre-prepared or what they call partially prepared, which basically means it's you know, just needs to be microwaved at that point. And you've got all the salt already in it. You've got, you know, processed meats. You've got heavily processed foods like that, and then you have, you know, very little room to do anything fresh. In Manatee County, the irony of it, right across from the school board building where we were sitting having this forum, is Flowers Bakery. And they actually buy bread off Flowers Bakery, but through U.S. Foods. So it goes from Flowers Bakery, it gets trucked to U.S. Foods, it gets frozen there, and then gets redelivered out to the school. So some of it is ludicrous. And they talk about the little things they do where one school had an organic farm and one day they eat food from the organic farm, and they talk about these different things. But at the end of the day, there's an opportunity to get involved in the local movement and just reduce these options and say, listen, you know, here's four or five good things, you know, that are going to be on your kid's lunch table today. You know, this idea, that's the other part that comes up, student acceptability. You know, I hear all the time from parents, my kids won't eat that. And I just, you know, I don't know what to say to that. I mean, my son eats what I give him.
I'll tell you what to say to that. As soon as they get hungry, they'll eat it.
Well, and Dennis said that in his article, and I remember that. I had a cousin who went through this phase where the only two things he would eat were hot dogs and gnocchi.
Sure.
And his mom was buying it.
Yeah.
And the pediatrician said, knock it off. And she said, well, he won't eat. And she said, the kid will not go hungry. Because eventually they're going to eat what they're served. But kids sometimes at certain age, like 3, 4, 5, they're trying to establish their independence. So sometimes it comes out as, well, I'm not going to eat what you give me.
We have the exact
right.
same problem. I mean, what kid doesn't? I mean, not all kids, but, you know, my son was the same way. Gnocchi, love gnocchi, the grilled cheese and hot dogs. And it got to a point, I said, you know what, cook one meal, and if he doesn't want to eat it, he'll get hungry tomorrow. And our pediatrician said the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, we were worried. You know, first-time parents, he said, look, as soon as he gets hungry, he will eat.
Yeah.
And so we waited out.
And Americans are not generally hungry. They don't really reach hungry very often.
God,
so
right.
it may
God,
take a day or two till the kid gets hungry. And you know what? Yeah. That, like, you know, their body's going to crave stuff.
Yeah.
And sooner or later, you know, as a parent, yeah. you're going to win.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. yeah.
We did this with our 21-year-old when he was 19 and living with us. He didn't like what was served. We're like, you know what? We don't charge you for rent. We don't charge you for groceries. You don't like what we're making?
Right.
Go buy your own food.
Right.
And
you know,
he started
and there is something to be said about our food culture because, you know, I look at the parents, I'm like, do you let them do that when it's time to go to bed? Well, no, it's bedtime to go to bed. Do you let them do that, you know, if they don't want to do homework? Well, no, I make them do their homework. So there's something about food, and I think it's built into our culture, and we've done a great job of marketing it, and I think it's one of those things that as the quality of life of Americans has continually gone down, there's no arguing that. The work week has become longer, people's opportunity to work in their chosen field has become more restricted, and real wages, when adjusted for inflation, have been flat for almost 4 decades. So when you look at that, you say people aren't, you know, they get these small pleasures, and it's marketed to them, treat yourself with all this crap. You know, go out and have, you know, you can buy that $4 Ben and Jerry's because you can't afford to go out, you know, to a nice dinner. And I think there's been part of it that's been, you know, the American culture has been, well, that's what I control. That's what's my choice. That's what's my guilty pleasure. And that we all indulge in this kind of, you know, food romance that you know, this is something that's a ritual that we treat ourselves to, and we pass it on to our kids. So where we don't give them the autonomy in all these other areas, well, with the food, they should eat whatever they want, just like I do, type thing. And, you know, you look at the, like Jim said earlier, it's an epidemic we're facing throughout this country. It is a huge part of our healthcare problem, a huge part of why Americans pay more for healthcare and are a less healthy population than so many other developed countries. A big part of it is because of all the type 2 diabetes, all the juvenile diabetes, all those are very, very expensive things to treat. And, you know, if we're going to start at 5 years old teaching them that, we're going in the wrong direction. You know, not you know, we're not fixing it. We're making it worse.
Now Dennis, do you have an experience or do you know what the private schools are doing? Because my children's private school, they changed their whole dietary process about six years ago. And they imposed whole different regulations. And even as a parent, when you take in snacks, we're not allowed to take in sugar, I guess what they call sugar snacks or bad snacks. You're supposed to take in healthier snacks. And they did that about 5 or 6 years ago. Granted, it's a private school. Did you find the same thing with private schools in Manatee County? Or is it the same U.S.
Some
foods?
Of them. Some of them. It depends. Here's the thing. The biggest thing driving is the county participates in the National School Lunch Program. Now, the way that works, and this is where it really comes back to, they get reimbursed for every meal served. Okay, at the high end, $2.77 for a free lunch. If somebody qualifies, 26 cents for somebody that purchases one in the cafeteria at full price. So the reimbursement level means that, well, the problem is, from what I understand, most school districts can only pay for about half of their cafeteria services, the employees and different stuff, with those reimbursements. So they need people, the parent that's not on free or reduced lunch, sending their kid in with a lunch money account. And that's where this emphasis on student acceptability comes from. And it seems like when schools participate in the National School Lunch Program, yes, then they have the free and reduced lunch opportunities, but the food gets much worse because the emphasis comes on what's the hot item. You know, in that debate, the dietitian kept saying, yes, that's also a very popular food item, or food option. She said the corn dog on a stick is a popular food option.
Sorry, how does someone who's a registered dietitian, they have a dietitian and a nutritionist on staff, how do they sit there with a straight face, educated?
I swear to God, I asked that question. I said, there's some things with the new guidelines coming out that we don't like. You know, you'll no longer have to serve a meat with breakfast. And I said, the only meat that was with that breakfast was that piece of processed sausage, whatever it was that was inside of that cornmeal. I said, do you really think that, does that qualify for you as a meat and something that you're sorry to see that come out of the the diet. I said, you know better than that. And she said, well, you know, our definitions on what a meat is might be different, and we might have different opinions on that, but, you know, yes. So she was advocating that it was a negative, that meat option was coming out, even though that's how it's being fulfilled. So they sit there, I think, too much, Robin, to answer your question, is dietitians, one, the American Dietetic Association, or Dietetic Association, is just married into the food pyramid and government data, and it's calorie counting to make sure that they've, you know, met those criteria. And they sit there kind of in a room with numbers, and they look at the menu, and they look at these different things and check the blocks to make sure they're having it. But when you get out into the cafeteria, it's very, very different.
I wasn't aware there was different definitions of meat.
Well, I think it depends on who's. I think I have to say, but you know, Dennis, the phrase that came to mind, you know, with this portion of the subject is bought and paid for. They have these huge salaries to toe the line, do what they're told, and I think there's a lack of professional accountability. When you've gone to college and you know, I mean, to me, that's a gross ethical violation. You know that what you're feeding, not just a kid, the population of the county, garbage food, and if you have a degree as a nutritionist or as a dietitian, you know better. You really know better. Yeah, sausage is meat, but anybody with half a brain is, you know, aware that it's not the best meat for you. You know, earlier this week we talked about kielbasa and Lebanon bologna. I love it, but it's processed meat. It's not something you eat every day. It's not something you bring into your... I mean, and I'm no nutritionist. I mean, it's just common sense. So for someone in that position making a six-figure salary to be selling that nonsense, clearly
yeah,
she's
that,
not working for a place of professional.
You have, you know, when you look at the whole thing, I didn't have the dietitian salary in there, but the director of food services earns $104,000 a year in Manatee County, and there's an assistant director that is well into the 50s, and then there's a dietitian. So you have all these people involved, and, you know, unfortunately, the end result seems to be we have this contract with this giant conglomerate. We have almost no flexibility. And what it turns out is that U.S. Foods picks most of the foods, and they have very little flexibility on what they get from them or ability to source from other, you know, local producers. So, you know, if the end result is going to be crap on a stick that comes from some conglomerate, I don't know why we need, you know, this big, heavy overhead and why that money's not going into the classroom. But you're right. What you end up having is you pay an administrator, and this is very typical across the district. There are many administrators. The directors all make over $100,000. Director of every single department, from, you know, transportation to curriculum to food services to everything, they're all six-figure incomes. And, you know, you get the message probably pretty quick. If you're making six figures in Manatee County, you are really doing well. And especially if you're coming from, you know, a $40,000-$50,000 type career path, which most of the markets are coming from elsewhere within a district. And the idea is, listen, don't rock the boat. You know, and then with the food services, it's, you know, we can't dip into our budget with this. We can't afford to do any differently. We need the kids coming in and paying for it. This isn't a money loser for us. We need as many kids eating their free and reduced lunch as possible. So the emphasis has to be on the percentage of kids eating, not on what they're eating. But then you can't turn around and say, well, we're not empowered to do better with the students when you're not making these small steps. Somebody's got to come up with some courageous leadership. Somebody has to look at all these problems for what they are, which is epidemic problems, and not, you know, patting themselves on the back about what a great job we're doing. The evidence is clear. Walk in the classrooms and see how many of the kids are obese, and then look at the grades and the you know, how many kids are at reading level, how many kids are at math level. Look at all those things and see we're failing in educating this part of our society, this little part of our Florida. We're failing it. Until we address it and say we've got to radically revitalize what we're doing, then we can't expect anything more than the same. And it's very clear that the people that are you know, on the gravy train are expecting more of the same.
Hey, Dennis, I know that this is kind of a personal subject for you, so I assume we can expect more articles in the future.
You can, and actually there's also a link. I had so many people ask me, you know, what are some of the things that you use, you know, packing lunch. My kid is in cafeteria about maybe twice a year. It's a treat. They're always on, like, non-testing days and stuff like that where he's allowed to eat in school, and he thinks it's a big deal. And he still makes pretty good choices when he does that. But I have a link at the bottom of my article right above the video that goes to a page that has all kinds of different meal options that we use in my family and that you know, people looking for quick and easy things. You know, I'm a single dad. My son's school's a half hour from where we live, so you know, there's a lot of logistics to go. I work long hours, so I'm sensitive to, you know, some of the same things a lot of other parents are. It has to be affordable. It has to be within the logistical realm of convenience that we need to adhere to. And I've got some ideas that I share there for some quick and easy meals.
Dennis, thank you very much for joining us this morning. You can find Dennis's article at thebradentontimes.com, as well as his articles throughout the week and articles here on our local area, politics, interest. You guys really kind of cover all the grounds here for Bradenton. Again, that's bradentontimes.com. And, Dennis, thank you very much, as always, for being with us on Thursday morning.
Thank you, guys. Keep up the great work.
Dennis, thank you.
Dennis, thank you.
Jimmy Buffett, how would you like to meet an endangered manatee? You can by joining Save the Manatee Club's Adopt the Manatee program. You can't take them home, but you can get to know your new manatee friend through the photo, biography, and information the club sends to you. And you can read updates on your manatee in the club newsletter. More importantly, your contribution goes to programs that are working to save manatees from extinction. It's easy to help. Call 1-800-432-JOIN.
Joey Donovan here from Geek Radio 1490. It's summer, and you know what that means. The snowbirds have left, the bugs have come back, the kids are out of school. It only means one thing. Party! And if you want that party to succeed, whether it's a wedding reception, a graduation party, or a beachside barbecue by the pool, you're going to want someone who knows how to break out the tunes. Her name, Valerie Silver. With BJ Silver Productions, Valerie's been DJing just about every major event within Sarasota and Manatee counties since 1995. And with her extensive library, from Sinatra to Justin Bieber, she's going to make sure that that's the least of your worries. That is, getting out on the floor and dancing y'all off. What? For more information, call Valerie Silver at VJ Silver Productions, 941-504-0889. That's 941-504-0889. Or visit her website, www.vjsilverproductions.com.
You feel petrified. You're struggling with your mortgage payments, not knowing what to do. You do nothing. But if you do something, you're far more likely to get the most positive outcome. Making Home Affordable is a free government program. Call 888-995-HOPE to talk one-on-one with a housing expert about your options. Call 888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
So, I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Joey Donovan here from Geek Radio 1490. It's summer, and you know what that means. The snowbirds have left, the bugs have come back, the kids are out of school. It only means one thing. Party! And if you want that party to succeed, whether it's a wedding reception, a graduation party, or a beachside barbecue by the pool, you're going to want someone who knows how to break out the tunes. Her name, Valerie Silver. With BJ Silver Productions, Valerie's been DJing just about every major event within Sarasota and Manatee counties since 1995. And with her extensive library, from Sinatra to Justin Bieber, she's going to make sure that that's the least of your worries. That is, getting out on the floor and dancing y'all off. What? For more information, call Valerie Silver at VJ Silver Productions, 941-504-0889. That's 941-504-0889. Or visit her website, www.vjsilverproductions.com.
You're listening to AM 1490, WWPR, Bradenton, Sarasota, Tampa Bay.
People have the power. Welcome back to the Henry Raines Show on AM 1490. I'm Robin Davis in the studio with Jim Delgado. Coming up in the last 15 minutes of the show, we'll be talking to Lorraine Downs from Downs Dining House in the south portion of Village of the Arts. First, we're going to get into a little bit of news. Big kind of a news. Those of you who listen regularly know we've been talking about Citizens United for quite a long time. And the Citizens United ruling, you know, how it's affected us, how it's affected our political system. And Wednesday night, former Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens took a poke at the controversial Citizens United decision, saying his former colleagues have probably already had second thoughts about it. The 2010 decision paved the way for the super PACs to which wealthy individuals, corporations, and labor unions can give unlimited amounts of money to support or oppose candidates. Stevens was among the justices who dissented in the court's 5-4 ruling. In remarks prepared for delivery at the University of Arkansas, Stevens predicted that the court will soon be forced to issue rulings that will undermine a key part of the Citizens United ruling, that the First Amendment prohibits the suppression of political speech based on the speaker's identity, including the fact that the speaker is a corporation. The court's decision left undecided whether the same free speech right applies to foreign corporations. In due course, Stevens said, the court will be called upon to decide that question, forcing it to craft an exception that will create a crack in the foundation of the majority opinion. The court must then explain its abandonment of, or at least qualify its reliance on, the proposition that the identity of the speaker is an impermissible basis for regulating campaign speech. It will be necessary to explain why the First Amendment provides greater protection of some non-voters than to that of other non-voters, he said. Stevens said a recent Supreme Court action may also undermine Citizens United. In January, the justices upheld a lower court ruling that said two non-citizens could not make political contributions to political candidates. It's therefore now settled, Stevens said, that the identity of some speakers may provide a legally acceptable basis for restricting speech through contributions. Unlike most retired Supreme Court justices, Justice Stevens has not been reluctant to criticize the rulings of his former colleagues. He's one of the few that's actually very outspoken.
You know, it's funny, and I said this when this ruling came out, that it was a short-term win for Republicans, and I know that most Republicans were really for it because they were on the winning end of that. Most corporations at that time were all conservative, and they were voting conservative. But, you know, I had called it back then that, you know, it's a short-term gain for them or win, but eventually corporations were basically going to destroy both parties. And that's pretty much what they've done. If you look at it, their campaign contributions, it's just crazy. So, you know, they might be excited about it because it benefits them now. But, you know, you start looking this forward, you know, 5, 6, 7 years from now, and the boardroom is going to be making all the decisions. You know, basically it's going to be the Pfizer candidate against the Johnson & Johnson candidate. And forget the parties. The line between the parties is going to be long erased by then. You know, and I think that's when they're going to realize, you know what, maybe that wasn't such a smart choice. And they have to reconsider. They just have to.
The parties are still, for the most part, supporting this, and I don't think they've fully realized that it's actually taking, like you said, their power away as political parties, and not that that's where it belongs either. But you're right. You know, when you look at the fact, Obama and Romney have both taken money from Goldman Sachs and a host of other corporations, and we're at a point where corporations are so potent and so strong, they literally control almost everything we do, and people need to, you know, people talk about, I want the government out of my life. It's not really the government you need to be worrying about as much as these corporations. When you look at the media, you know, we talk about this here a lot because we are the independent media. 90% of the media is owned by 6 companies.
Right.
There was an incident not too long ago, Minot, I believe it was South Dakota, there was a train derailment. Every single radio station in that town was owned by Clear Channel. And the guy programming the stations was in Texas. So there's this massive train derailment, something like 1,600 people affected, one death, and it wasn't on the radio because some guy's sitting in Texas. So if that doesn't scare you and it doesn't make you want to look at, you know, getting corporate influence out of our lives, you really need to do more research.
Yeah,
Google it.
I always put it to people in very simple terms because when you talk about Washington, D.C., people really don't understand it. Let's assume that we did not have county commissioners and Walmart was our county commissioner. Let's just put it in real terms. Let's assume Tropicana and Walmart had a representative on there. And they said Walmart on there. They represent Walmart. And here's the thing. I'd rather have county commissioners that all I know, if I don't like their actions or what they're doing, I can mobilize people, I can picket people, I can do voter drives, I can do information drives, and I know that I have a shot of maybe derailing their political career by supporting another candidate or at least not supporting them, whereas Walmart, there is nothing I could do about the representative from Walmart. I don't care how much I picket or what I do. I have no control over his salary. I have no control over his feelings. And So what? So you're mad at him. So what are you going to do? You can't do anything about it. His boss, you're not his boss. At least we are. We forget that the government officials work for us. The president works for us. County commissioners work for us. City officials, they work for us. And if we start mobilizing and voting, only a quarter of our population actually votes. If we had more voter participation, we would have more control over the big bad government. We forget that. We're in control. We give up that control. Corporations have not given up control.
We've gotten lackadaisical. Right. We've gotten apathetic. Right.
They know what to do. They are biting the politicians, and basically it's their voice. We can take that back. But you know, like I said, we're so apathetic, and the thinking is, look, I'm only one person. Who cares? So, you know, I can't vote. I don't have time. And they're all the same. But people are not all – the politicians are not all the same. You know, they're all individuals, and they all have their political track. So I don't know what we're going to do. I don't know. But keep on not voting and keep on getting screwed, I guess.
Voter, you're on the line. We hope you're a voter, but caller, you're live on the air.
Hey, good morning, guys. Jimmy, I can't believe you just said what you said.
Why? What's wrong with that?
You actually believe that citizens can affect change in their government by voting?
Absolutely.
You've got to be out of your mind.
Oh, but Nick, walk it back. Let's walk this through, though. What's the percentage of the population that votes?
Let's walk this through, Jimmy.
No.
Hold on a second. Nick, I just want to
walk this through my mindset. What's the percentage of our population that votes?
I don't know, 15, 20?
It's a little more than that. Correct. So that means 75% of the people are not active in voting. I mean, that's basically three-fourths.
So when you go to pull that lever, Jimmy, who decides who's on the ballot? The GOP and the DDMs. And there's absolutely no way of affecting change in either one of those organizations.
See, I disagree. I think that if we all got on board and we all voted, we all mobilized, we all hold up the signs, we all talk to our neighbors, we all get educated on the issues, I truly think, Nick, from the bottom of my heart, that we can affect change. I just think as we sit at home and we don't. I understand your feelings. I understand the app. I mean, I understand the anger towards our government. I just think that we can change it. There's no doubt in my mind we could change it.
I believe that too. I mean, yeah. You know, people often think, what can I do? What can I say? I'm just one person. Well, what people forget is, I don't know, how many million of us are there? And when we all get together and actually vote, that's how you say your opinion. And Jim mentioned, you know, he said, you know, this person works for us, this person works for us. I'm one of the few people who has not forgotten that. I have no problem emailing county commissioners, emailing the governor. I'll email anybody if I'm upset about something. And some listen, and some don't even bother to acknowledge you've emailed them.
Sure.
I've picked up the phone and called some of them and said, what were you thinking? Yeah. And this is why I don't like what you did. And I may not change your mind, and I may not. But you know what? Recently, in Manatee County, before the county commission, came a proposition to pass a resolution opposing Citizens United, because the groups that are against this have tried to work this at the federal level. It's not working yet. So they've gone back. They've gone grassroots. There's an organization. You can get them online, movetoamend.org. They will tell you how to make this happen. City by city, county by county, commission by commission, they're passing these resolutions saying, no, this is not okay, and this is not what we want as citizens. So some of our local residents go in. They propose it. A couple of the commissioners were ready to pass it on the spot. It turned out being a 3-3 split with one guy in the middle. I believe it was Chappie. I have to look that up. He said, I haven't heard anything about this. Well, we said it on the air, and I'll keep saying it because it hasn't come back up yet. Make sure he hears about it, folks. Email all of the county commissioners and tell them you want this passed. That's how you make a difference. They're going to take it to workshop. They're going to hear comments from the public. And if you don't go to those meetings or you don't write an email or make a phone call, you can't sit around a year from now if it doesn't pass and say, well, what does it matter? See, they wouldn't pass it. Because we actually had that commissioner who said, I need to hear from the county. I need to hear from you all and see what you want.
And look at the local examples. I'm not talking about the Tea Party nationally supported by Koch money. I'm talking about the local Tea Party. Look, I disagree with the Tea Party probably 98%. I think the only thing I agree with them is that they're mobilized. But look what changes they made. You know, I'm not talking about the Koch money. I'm talking about the local Tea Parties. A lot of the local Republicans that I know on a personal level, I talk to them about this, and I say, look, Jim, they're out there. You know, because I said, well, why do you speak to these groups? He goes, because they mobilize and they vote and they write and they bother me. They text me. They come to my office. So I have to listen to them. And we're talking about literally at the beginning was ragtag groups of different people, no clear leader. But they were loud and they were angry. So if you think that people can't make a difference, I mean, a good example is your local tea parties. Like I said, I disagree with them almost 100%. But my God, you cannot negate the fact that they are making an impact. Occupy Wall Street. You cannot negate the fact that people are making a difference, at least the way they think. It might not be a big difference, but there is a difference. Yeah. If everybody mobilized, we could really make a difference.
Well, and Occupy is a great example because Occupy has, you know, people, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what you stand for. Well, guess what? Guess how many people are talking about Citizens United since Occupy started getting out in the streets? Because you know what? They were doing some of the stuff we've talked about, which does help. And they said, you know what? You guys aren't listening enough. So watch this. And that was one of the core things that started them. It was, you know, the Wall Street problems, the funding, the money in government. And a couple months after Occupy started, I'm sitting at home, I'm watching the news, WTSP, and they did like a 5-minute bit on how super PAC funding works. Now, they never mentioned Occupy, but I went, that's a victory. Because people now and they broke it down into like fifth grader terms, you know, so-and-so was the corporation and so-and-so was the candidate, and they really, really broke it down into really simplified terms. And they were explaining it, and they were saying this, and they were actually, you know, and they kind of took a position, which was weird for a news channel, but they're like, this is what this ruling is about. This is why it's such a controversial issue. This is who's controlling your candidates. And I have to imagine there's a lot of people sitting at home going, wow, really? Like, it was such a radical thing to happen. This has been going on for years and years and years, and now people are starting to get it and stand up against it.
And Nick was talking about, you know, GOP and how powerful they are in the money. Well, here's the problem. That's the Republican, not the politicians. If you're mad because Ron Paul didn't get any respect, that's your fault, Republican, registered Republican. Because I don't care. Look, you can put as many $1 billion into a primary as you want. If I like my candidate, I like my candidate. So if they were all individuals and they quit listening to the radio station that tells them what to do, Ron Paul would be their candidate. You know, they like to, oh, Ron Paul gets no respect, he doesn't get the money. Well, if his message was so strong, who cares what the commercials say? Vote your conscience. But yesterday, the captain was talking about, you know, we all agreed. They don't vote their conscience or their ideology. They vote who they think are going to win. So it's your fault. If you allow them to be the nominee, that's your fault. That's our fault.
Yes.
You know, we can blame corporations because it's fun and we do it all the time and they do dump a lot of money. But at the end of the day, when you go into that lever, you're the one pulling that lever. It's not Walmart pulling the lever. It's you. So if you listen to Walmart and you're swayed by Walmart, you know, that's your fault. You know, so. Anyway,
we're gonna shift gears really hard. Actually,
we're gonna go back to food.
We're gonna go. Well, you're gonna go back to food. Exactly. We have in our presence one of our local cooks, Lorraine Downs from Downs Dining House, which is in the South Village of the Arts. She's here. If you guys are paying attention, you know it's Art Walk Weekend in the Village this week. And good morning, Lorraine.
Good morning.
And Lorraine, like me, is dressed to match the studio. When you wear purple in here, it's like camouflage.
I should wear my purple.
My favorite.
It's mine, too, but in this place, I like blend into the walls. There's pictures of me where you can't see anything but my head. First off, tell us where you're located.
We are at 1506 13th Street West. It's in the south end of the village.
There's lots of new, and that's one of the things. South Village is really growing. There's a number of businesses down there, Six Oaks, Lorraine's restaurant. Lorraine and Joe's restaurant, actually, her husband is a part of the mix, and her mom, if you go there, you'll meet her mom, a very cool lady, and oftentimes her daughters are helping out. We've got F8 Gallery down there, Plato's Gallery, the South Village Gallery. There's quite a few things down there, and sometimes people, like, because it's not the main section of the village, so there's been a lot of new things opening up, and Lorraine is one of them. Tell us about what you do at Downs.
Well, we're pretty unique. We opened in December. We are doing homemade soups and sandwiches Wednesday through Saturday now. Friday night, we have a teen night. It's supposed to be an alternative for the teens. We have a high school band that comes and plays, and they're not too terrible. And Manatee High School Poetry Club just started coming. We make it inexpensive for them on Friday night. We do hamburgers and hot dogs. They can sit there and listen to the band or to the poetry or kind of do like an open night, mic night. Saturdays, we do home-style cooking. We always have chicken on the grill, but we can do turkey or meatloaf or pork. And everything's homemade and fresh.
And you have a special theme this weekend.
Yes, we're doing barbecue. So we're going to do pulled pork and chicken. Coleslaw, potato salad, watermelon, and cupcakes.
Kickoff of the summer And also, last month, we had Hector and Bonnie here from BMI and Blue Marshmallow to talk about the Art Walk, and they mentioned there was a salsa contest.
Yes.
And I heard a rumor that you may have won.
Yes, we did, actually.
Oh, so salsa like dancing or salsa like eating?
Eating.
Oh, okay.
Please, this is I'm not as my daughter is the salsa dancer.
Okay, well, you never
so apparently that. You can get a salsa dancer at Downs while you're there.
Well, they were talking about music and poetry. I thought, my God, they're dancers also.
Well, Joe is my husband is a teacher at Southeast. He's the guitar and orchestra teacher. So, yes, we have a lot of music down there. Yes, we did win the salsa eating contest, but I cannot take credit for it. I do not personally like salsa. My husband makes a salsa that apparently is to die for.
Now, are you going to have that award-winning salsa on the menu anytime soon for people, or is it going to be a special event?
We've kind of thought about it. We're going to revamp our menu to include it because he loves to make it. And
what kind of salsa are we talking about?
Like
there's a lot of salsas out there.
What type are we talking about?
We were told, one of the quotes was, it's very authentic.
Like Mexican salsa?
Yes.
Ooh.
There's like a lot of jalapenos in it.
Traditional salsa.
Yes.
Starting to drool a little bit.
Drooling.
I like salsa.
Too bad you're going out of town because Friday night, Mr. Davis and I are hitting the Art Walk for, we're going to eat our way through the village, actually.
Well, I'll have Joe make it for tomorrow night then.
Oh, Mr. Davis, if you're listening, now you have to go. No whining. Once it starts to get hot, he's like, I'll go later, because he hates to go walking in the heat, and he hates, but you know what, every time he goes, he whines about it, and then he gets there, and he's like, I'm so glad I went, because he gets the wine and the food, and he has such a good time, and we've seen some great concerts and great events there, and there is a dance hall, Wilson's Dance Sport comes out, and they do demonstrations, so yes, you actually can get some salsa dancing. I bet if you ask and say, I want to see salsa dancing, they'll do it for you. There's so much going on, you know, at the Art Walks. Now, this is, you know, the first summer one. It's not a major theme because sometimes throughout the year we have things like the Garden Walk. But it's just the regular Art Walk where all the galleries are open. They have, you know, wine and cheese and music and just there's so – I can never make it through the whole village. I love going to the Art Walk. I take turns. I either start in the south end or the north end every other month because you get – there's so much great art. There's so much going on. There's so much to see, and it is so much fun. And when I first had heard about Village of the Arts, I'm like, what? Huh? What are you talking about? You know, I was new to the area. And once I discovered it, I go every month. I actually missed last month because, you all remember, I sounded like Kathleen Turner. I had bronchitis, and I was not sharing, and I didn't go. And I was really disappointed, though. I was, like, bummed out because it's become a part of my, you know, on the calendar whenever possible. I hit the Art Walk.
So how does it work? For those of us, those of our listeners that have never went, let's say it's Friday night. Where do I park? Where do I walk? What am I to expect?
There's street parking. Nobody has any...
all street parking.
All street parking. You can park anywhere in the village and walk. You can start at the south end or at the north end and just walk.
And when you say south end, if I'm coming in, I'm coming from Northeast Braden for Sarasota, which streets am I looking for to get into?
Okay, it's 17th Avenue is the south end to 9th Avenue, which is the north end, and from 13th Street to 8th Street.
Okay, so then I just park, and then I get out of my car, and what am I supposed to expect? Is there clowns in the street, or how does that work?
Sometimes it depends on the Art Walk, but usually it's more subdued, and you just see little open signs for all the galleries and restaurants, and you just go in and see what you like.
Just go in and peruse and hit every house that's open?
Yes.
All right.
Different foods, different...
I like that.
Different things. And actually, the Art Walk is not just, it starts Friday night at 6, also Saturday morning. All the, you know, again, all the artisans, because there are varying hours at the different galleries, but all of them are open for all of the Art Walk. They have rotating, you know, guest artists. There is literally so much. And Lorraine, actually, at your restaurant, you have the art from
from Six Oaks.
From Karen Klosky at Six Oaks, who is a very, very... very cool artist and a very cool human being. And now Karen is one of the few whose gallery is not open for Art Walk because Karen is out somewhere at one of the other galleries
playing
music. And she prefers to be out there playing music. She only actually has one day a week she's open. I think it's Fridays from 11 to 4 she's open. She has a salon-style gallery.
Oh, wow.
And she's the only... It's her whole house. You go into the gallery and, like, you walk through her bedroom. And
oh,
she,
yeah.
This woman, she's so much fun. And so she is, like, the one exception who's not open, but she does it on purpose, and she'll put up a sign usually on her front door that says, you can find me at wherever. And she has a washtub base, and so there's so much cool stuff that goes on. Sometimes it's two musicians, sometimes it's five, and all that going on. And then her art, though, is at
at my
at Downs, so yep. You're not missing out on Karen's art because she's not open. And then you guys also have some really great chairs. I'm meaning to ask this. Who painted the chairs in the restaurant?
Southeast Art students.
Yeah, so yes. And I'm not going to tell anybody what they look like. You have to go check out the chairs.
Really cool.
They did some really, really cool work, and a lot of it's music-themed.
Yes.
And every chair is a unique piece of art.
Of art. They did House of the Rising Sun was their theme to start with. I wanted to share something about Karen. 2 weeks ago, she came down to the restaurant, and the students were playing. And I guess she grabbed a guitar and started playing with them. And one of the kids came inside and said, "Miss Downs, there's a lady out there that took my guitar." And I said, "Oh, that's okay. She's fine.
She'll give it back."
Well, by the time the end of the night, they were in love with her. She started playing music that she's written, and now they have it. So
yeah, she's one of the secret gems there in the village. Very first time I met Karen, I went into her gallery and she's like, "Come on, sit out back. You want to have a glass of wine?" She's like your instant friend, and then she's this amazing artist. My mother doesn't know this yet, but she's getting a Karen Klosky original for Mother's Day, which I haven't mailed yet. I was sick. I called my mother. I said, "It'll get there." I said, "It's awesome," but she doesn't know what it is, so I can't talk about it yet.
And I do have to put a plug in for my mother. If it wasn't for my mother, I'd never do this because everything I've learned about cooking came from her.
What kind of food?
And she's 76 years old and still going strong and helps me out every day but Friday night.
What kind of soups are we talking about?
Chicken noodle, black bean. Today we're doing beef barley. We do Manhattan clam chowder. We do a chicken Tuscany soup. So we kind of change it up. During the week, we always had the same soups, but we change it up on Saturdays.
Yeah, and they're very close. For those of you who work downtown, they're really easy to get to. They're just a couple blocks from McKechnie Stadium after, you know, when there's a game going on or for lunch during the week. Real quick and easy to get to, and excellent food, excellent service, and yeah, just the trip to meet Lorraine's mom is totally worth it. She's a riot. I mean, this woman is a riot. She has you, like, laughing, like, 2 seconds that you meet her and you're laughing because she's a card.
And
it is. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say downsdininghouse.com, and if you order, you can take out.
And give us your address one more time.
1506 13th Street West.
1506 13th Street West in South Village. Come down Wednesday through Saturday for lunch, Friday nights for teen nights, Saturday nights for dinner, and, of course, join us at Village of the Arts for Art Walk this weekend, Friday night and Saturday morning. Thank you to Lorraine and Jim Delgado.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you, Lorraine. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
And we are out of here. Stay tuned for The Happiest Woman.